Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens on this Friday, May 19th. And, well, you know, we told you before that we would pop up once in a while when we had new stuff, fresh stuff to offer to you. And Arpin, today we've got a guest. It's going to be a fun one.
Yes, we have a guest. He, you know, after the Canadiens nominated him for the King Clancy Award, Jordan Harris agreed to come and talk about some of the things that went into that nomination and had sort of his viewpoint on I guess the responsibilities or the opportunities available to players off the ice to make a difference in the community. Is a very engaging and interesting conversation. So we'll bring that to you in a few minutes. We wanted to start the show just talking about, you know, some of the Canadiens related issues that we've seen going on at the World Championships. I think there's two in particular that are of great interest. You know, Marc-Antoine had a story yesterday that came out on Sam Montembeau and what the Canadiens should do with him and how he's performing at the World Championships as Team Canada's number one goaltender. Do you think, you know, I think he's, in many ways, Sam Montembeau is kind of continuing what we've seen from him this season.
Yeah.
And listen, the tournament's going to get harder for him. Like, we shouldn't name this as being this overwhelming success. But the fact that Team Canada chose him as their number one goaltender, granted, there weren't many options available. And the fact he's performed so far, at least the way he has, you know, I don't want you to just completely summarize your article, but in terms of his future outlook, and sorry, I'm rambling on, but last week or a couple of weeks ago, I did this whole thing on how the Canadiens can find a goalie. And many of the comments on that story where I said it might take 3 or 4 years before they find one were like, well, what about Montembeau?
Mm-hmm.
And my response to that was, sure, Montembeau could become a guy like that. But if I'm the Canadiens, there's no way I can bank on that. I can't feel secure in the knowledge that Sam Montembeau is going to become a good enough goaltender that he could get 50 starts a year or something like that. But having said that, they do kind of have to bank on him a little bit pretty soon.
At some point you have to do a leap of faith with your goaltender. And it's true when you have, for example, a young goaltender who's about to go to become waiver eligible, and you say, okay, what do we do with this guy? Do we trust him? Do we take a chance? And it's just as true when the goalie is slightly older and he's showing a good progression curve, well, such as Montembeau. At some point, you have to commit yourself because, yeah, the Canadiens can go out and say, oh, we're going to draft a young goalie in the next draft. They could go after Trey Augustine, Michael Rarabal. They could go after whoever. I mean, Bjarnason, Guyen. There's a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. But as you pointed out in your study, it's going to be a few years before any of those kids is ready to make an impact on the Montreal Canadiens. So in the meantime, what do you do? And the reason I wrote about this article, I mean, of course, Montembeau is still playing. It's great. I think that it's great, a great platform that for him to be at the World Championships. And even if we're certainly not going to read too much into the fact that he's played extremely well against Latvia and Slovakia, there are harder tests for him coming on later in the tournament. But the fact that he's been named number one goalie for Canada, and the fact that his progression's been so clear and convincing the last 2 years that you have to take your chance on a guy like that and say, you know what, we're going to bank on the fact that he's going to continue because he's at the right age at 26 to say, well, he can continue his development. And I remember whenever we ask Martin Saint-Louis, what do you think this guy's ceiling is? He always says, I don't know, because there's no
favorite
answer. But yeah. But in this case, it's always, well, why should there be a limit on someone's potential? Why would we cap it? And right. I think that Montembeau is a great example of that. There's no really definitive answer on what his ceiling might be. So just go ahead and continue with him. And the reason I wrote this article is because he's going to become a free agent, unrestricted free agent, at the end of next season. And it seems as though it really has flown under the radar. And the Canadiens have to basically, I think that's my point of view, they have to commit themselves this summer and say, well, we're going to give him an extension this summer. Because if you don't do that and you let just his contract run out and enter next season without Montembeau having a contract, then there's an uncertainty both for the player and for the team. And if he does well, by the mid-season point, other teams will say, wait a minute, this guy, he could be our solution when he hits the market. And his price would only go up. So it makes sense for the Canadiens not having any real alternative apart from him to turn to Montembeau and say, you know what, we're going to give you another contract. I don't know, 3 years, whatever the number of years, but they have to continue with it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think it's a trickier thing. There's if I'm Sam Montembeau, I'm tempted to bet on myself.
Yeah.
You know, the way things are going, I would be tempted to say, okay, you want to sign me to a new contract? Well, this is what it's going to cost you to buy my UFA years. Because this is a once in a career opportunity for Sam Montembeau. Like, it's the way things are playing out. He's in a prime age for a goaltender. He's hitting unrestricted free agency as he's on an upward trajectory, and that the eyes of the hockey world are on him more. As you pointed out in your piece, his analytics have been strong. So any team that has an analytical bent is going to be on top of what's going on with this guy. It's so, you know, if ideally for the Canadiens, he has 1 year left on his deal. You sign him to a 3-year extension this summer. That gets you the 4 years that you need to, in theory, develop a goaltender of the future.
Yeah.
That would be the ideal scenario. As you just mentioned, though, they have no other viable options yet. You know, we don't want to close the door on Caden Primo's potential. We don't want to close the door. Jakub Dobesh is in the system. Frederik Dekau is also playing at the World Championships for Denmark. And so there are goaltenders in the system. But, you know, you and I both know that finding a top-end goaltending talent is a priority for the Canadiens this summer, a young goaltending talent, whether that be via trade, whether that be via draft. You mentioned some of the top goalie prospects available. So if I'm Sam Montembeau, I'm looking at this and being like, you need a bridge goalie. Like, you need one badly. Yeah. If you don't sign me, where are you going to get one? It's you know, and so on the one hand, after so much uncertainty throughout his career, he could look at a three-year, $12 million extension.
That'd ballpark.
Something
That'd
like
be
that.
Amazing for him. Honestly, right. He doesn't have the numbers to ask for $4 million yet.
No, but he has the leverage of the UFA status. He has the leverage of what's been happening. And so, you know, but even then, like, if I'm Sam Montembeau, I guess this is a good and bad way of looking at it, but like, Cal Peterson is sitting with a $5 million a year contract, you know, and things obviously did not go well for him this year after signing that contract. But still, Sam Montembeau could be like, well, the Kings decided to bet on that guy and gave him $5 million a year on a long-term deal.
Yeah.
What have I done to deserve any different? You know, I'm hitting UFA. Some team out there will give me something like that, perhaps. Who knows? So I just don't think it's – unless Sam Montembeau absolutely wants to be in Montreal, which I think is – there's a very good chance of that. I think he really enjoys playing here. You know, if they offered him 3 years and $10 million, which would be kind of market value for a guy like him, if they want to make sure that this gets locked in, and you have, you know, I guess a year from now, you have a 1A goalie at $4 million, that's not bad. But I'd say that's kind of the range that we're talking about, and Sam Montembeau has to decide if he's willing to give not a discount, but like just accept fair market value when he could go onto the UFA market and get more than market value because of just the nature of unrestricted free agency, or if he wants to play a little bit of hardball and do that and say, listen, if you want to buy three of my UFA years, you're gonna have to pay up.
Yeah. Well, he's got some arguments. He's got some leverage. There's no doubt about it. But I think the teams more and more, when it comes to goalies, they'll identify an envelope, a certain amount of money that they'll give the position, and not necessarily to one guy. There are a lot more tandems than before. So the guys that, you know, that Connor O'Hellebuck is meant to become a UFA at the end of next season too. He's going to have a huge payday, but he's become a minority in terms of those guys that are truly number one goaltenders. A guy like Montembeau, I think, is perfectly aware of his situation. And I think he makes a good tandem with Jake Allen, because both guys, even though one is on the upswing and the other one is slowly coming down, they're both comfortable with that system. And I think that's something that you like to see, especially in positions such as the Canadians, where the tandem is their only go-to scenario at this point, that they have two guys that complement each other well in terms of their experience, their age curve, and their willingness to take part in that. So Montembeau, even though he could play hardball and choose to go after a higher payday, I think that if he reads the tea leaves properly, he'll see that he's got a good situation and being probably the 1A versus the 1B, he would be probably the more prominent goalie in a tandem situation going forward. That might mean a little bit less money than if he was hunting for a contract that portrays him as a true number one. But if he tries to do that, he might end up in a place that's certainly not going to be as comfortable, as motivating, and as endearing to him that Montreal is. So at some point, if you try to get greedy, well, careful what you wish for, because there's going to be other factors that come in the way that might not make the end picture as enticing as what you imagined in the first place.
And there's also, as a goaltender, it's so complicated judging your value, because it's entirely based on demand. And there are some years where goalies are hugely in demand, where there are a lot of jobs available throughout the league, but there are only, you know, 64 jobs.
Yeah.
In the NHL. That's just reality. In some years, 55 of those jobs are spoken for, and there's only like 9, and they're all backup jobs. And so that's another factor that he has to kind of look at is, okay, in the summer of 2024, well, for instance, seemingly Winnipeg's going to need a goalie. You know, that's kind of how you have to look at it. And so that's another factor there. The other guy, there are several, you know, Joel Armia is playing lights out for Finland again. He's you know, this is
right on brand.
If only he could find a year-long format that just like the World Championships, but all year, then maybe that contract with the Canadians would be somewhat worth it. But you know, this is the second year in a row, and frankly, you know, it's good to not make too much of it, because I think last year when he performed so well in the World Championships, at least I looked at it like, okay, good, he's ending his season on a good note. It's going to help his confidence. He's going to come into camp. He's going to add to that. This year, obviously, he hurt himself in camp, and so that he hurt himself throughout the season. That was a factor, but I'm not going to read too much into his World Championships performance as it pertains to the Canadians, because I think we saw this year that it doesn't necessarily translate. But speaking of translate, you know, the U.S. team is very young. They chose a very, very young team to go to this tournament. I found it super interesting. Yeah. And obviously Lane Hutson, Luke Tuck is also part of that, but Lane Hutson is there. And, you know, he's continuing to do Lane Hutson things on this stage against men. You know, it's already decided that he's going back to Boston University, but the more I watch him succeed at any level he performs at, the more I'm starting to think that, you know, the low floor, high ceiling sort of profile that he's been given, is that floor is, I think, a lot hot, maybe considerably higher than we thought it was.
But aren't you, I mean, he scored a beautiful goal against Austria. I find it interesting that for that game, the U.S. team got the help of Tyler Cleven, you know, young defenseman from the Ottawa Senators. So he joined the U.S. team and was immediately put on the top four on defense. And Hutson was relegated as the seventh defenseman. And despite that, I mean, against Austria, he was lights out. He was player of the game for them. He scored a beautiful goal. But prior to that, I was wondering, because I've seen instances of other teams putting a lot of pressure on him and force him to make quick decisions with the puck. And sometimes he got a bit handcuffed. And I'm wondering to which extent the experience that he takes in those world championships and playing in different caliber, different types of hockey players, older men, probably different strategies than what he used to seeing in college, if it might help him bring his game to another level, because he's been facing different types of challenges. And I think that sometimes, even though he's playing on a bigger ice surface at the Worlds, the way that some opponents have really applied forecheck on him and forced him in some cases to make turnovers, it really probably opened his eyes on, okay, this is the stuff that I need to work on. Not only next year at BU, but if I want to bring my career to another level against men.
Yeah, I think he gets that. I mean, the interesting thing about him is that he always has these opportunities to be like, okay, I have to do this. I have to do this to compete. I have to do this to compete. But ultimately, what he winds up doing is stuff like that goal against Austria. Like, he just winds up doubling down on what he is. And he doesn't need to necessarily learn all these little tricks. Like, it's. I think he's conscious of it, but he's also has an extremely high self-worth or self-confidence. Like, he believes that he doesn't have to do anything. He succeeded playing the way he does at every level. He's been given no reason to think otherwise, that this will not work at the NHL level. It should, as you grow, and as you grow as a player, as you grow physically, as you grow as a person, maturity wise, as you get smarter. You know, he's already like just this incredibly intelligent hockey player, and is able to identify gaps and has a deep understanding of the flow of the game and when to attack. I'm just starting to, the more you watch, after you watch everything he did at BU this year, because everyone's like, oh, wait till he gets to BU. He's going to be playing these players who are 21, 22, even 23. Then you're really going to see how his size limits him. Okay, well, I'll just go out and have the best freshman season for a defenseman, like in NCAA history kind of thing. Then he goes to the men's worlds. Oh, well, now you're going to see what happens when he plays against full-size men, and he's going to be physically challenged or whatever. And okay, I'll just put up a point a game through my first four games, and USA won't lose a game despite how young we are, and I'm just going to score the biggest highlight reel goal of the tournament. It's at some point you just have to tell yourself, and listen, I think there are members of the Canadians where it's still at the beginning of the season, even midway through the season, still weren't sure. The sort of the answer I would get when I would bring him up is like, well, if he plays, he'll probably be great. But that if he plays part is still there, and to me, the if he plays part is getting less and less, it's starting to make less and less sense. It's starting to look more and more like this guy is going to play, and he is going to be a great, and he's going to be a mold changing defenseman where players like his younger brother, for instance, maybe won't make it to the end of the second round just because of his size.
But it's interesting because once a year, we have Craig Button as a guest on our podcast, and I remember back at the draft, he used to say, well, if Hudson was 5'11", not even 6 feet, just 5'11", he would have contended to go first overall. That's the level of ability and the tools that this kid has. It's amazing.
He's listed at 5'10 now. I say listed because... Yeah, BU lists him at 5'10".
He said himself that he was expected to continue to grow, and that he would be literally, in the physical sense of the word, he would be a late bloomer, physically speaking. So that's great. And I think that more than his height, it's really his build. That's where he'll need to get stronger. But it's not going to change who he is as a hockey player. And to me, what strikes me, and not only because of this highlight reel goal against Austria, but on many occasions in this tournament, it's as if at some point he's able to press pause on everything that happens in front of him, and he finds a lane where he knows that he can go through and carry the puck into a place where he's going to create a scoring opportunity. So it's funny that his first name is Lane, because that's what he does. He finds lanes.
He finds lanes, absolutely. So yeah, I think, you know, in both cases, Motombo and Hudson, pretty exciting developments for the Canadians organizationally. If Motombo can fill a hole temporarily for this team, that would be a big game changer. And if you get a puck mover like Lane Hudson, which is another hole that this team has organizationally, that would just be great. And so this is actually a decent transition to our guest, Jordan Harris, who, you know, at the end of the season, I asked Jordan Harris, I was like, hey, at some point during the offseason, would you mind coming on our podcast? And his eyes lit up. He's like, absolutely. He's super excited to do it. And that kind of tells you what you need to know about Jordan Harris. He's just a guy who enjoys talking to people, enjoys meeting people. And as you'll hear in the interview, when he was asked about sort of the media environment, and, you know, I like getting to know you guys, you know, like you guys are part of that world, and I want to be part of it. So when he got nominated by the Canadians for the King Clancy Award, I thought that would be a good time to invite him onto the podcast, and he was very happy to do so. So I guess we'll talk about our conversation with him coming out of it, but really, really good, fun conversation with Jordan Harris that doesn't have a whole lot to do with the Canadians, but more to do with Jordan Harris.
Yeah, actually, we pretty much determined that we would not talk about hockey. So,
but we wound up. I think we wound up talking about hockey a little bit, a fair bit, and just generally hockey culture. And but very interesting conversation. Hope you enjoy it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, everyone. Well, we're very happy to have Jordan Harris with us here today to talk, just to talk about stuff, about him and about just about life in general. We're going to try and keep this. I know, you know, mostly Canadians fans listening to the podcast, and you might want to have some Canadians talk on here. But really, as actually I just mentioned to Jordan off the air, is some of the most interesting things we talk about with him happen once the interview's over, once we're just chatting. So I thought we would just chat about just kind of life in general. And really, you know, coming off your nomination for the King Clancy, honestly, like, I didn't look this up, but I can't remember the last time the Canadiens nominee for the King Clancy was a rookie. That's got to be a first of some sort. So congratulations on that. What did that mean to you to be nominated for that award?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you guys for having me, first of all. It meant a lot, honestly, because of, you know, growing up, and it was always, you know, being more than just a hockey player, you know, it was being a good friend, being a good family member, you know, it being good in school and really taking your studies seriously. But it was always that thing in our family where it was never just enough to be an athlete. You know, it was always to be an all-around good person. In the King Clancy Award, I was a little surprised because I didn't really expect, you know, anything from doing some of the community work this year. Like, I just did that because, that, you know, falls in line with my values as a person and stuff that I want to do personally. And so, I mean, it's a huge honor to be nominated. And some of my friends were like, yeah, it's a little surprising and cool to see, you know, a rookie, a first year guy, doing that community work and being nominated and just to see like the list of names on the mm-hmm. King Clancy list. Like you see Bergeron, you see all these guys that have been doing work for so long. And so, and just see your name, you know, right next to them. It was really, really cool and a little surprising.
So the King Clancy, for those who are not really familiar with it, it's a trophy that's given every year to the player who best exemplifies leadership qualities on and off the ice and has made significant humanitarian contribution to the community. And it used to be an award that the players would nominate one of their teammates by themselves. So it was interesting because it would give an idea or a perception of how teammates would view each other and they would nominate, you know, one of their guys. And for the last few years, it's the teams themselves that have been asked to promote a guy and say, well, this guy is going to be our King Clancy nominee this year. And from what I was told, even though Jordan, you're a rookie, I think that the Canadians were really, really enthusiastic with the interest that you've showed and the motivation that you've shown in getting involved in inclusion issues. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that you seem to be very comfortable speaking out on these topics. And this is something that the Montreal Canadiens organization has not seen very often. So, you know, I think that you've made capsules, you've met with First Nations youth in the city. And I remember you being vocal on the various thematic evenings that happened throughout the course of the season. So when you say, I consider myself more than a hockey player, that really speaks at the core of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's, I think you kind of owe it to, you know, these communities and I mean, everyone involved in hockey as a player, you know, and now seeing this year, how much more of a platform you have, you know, to speak your mind and speak out. I mean, things I think are the right things to say. And so it's really, really interesting to see it, you know, kind of reverberate throughout the community. You know, when you speak up or when you, like you said, like join the First Nations for the day and hang out with the kids and whatnot, or what we did for Black History Month. Like it's really, cool to see it, you know, have more meaning behind it and have it kind of spread throughout, you know, Quebec as a whole, or I mean, Canada as a whole. And you're not really sure what impact it may have, mm-hmm. but I mean, however, you know, it helps down the line. I think it's fantastic.
I wanted to ask you about your experience in youth hockey. You've been pretty eloquent about talking about the barriers that we have to the game. Obviously the cost is a big one. But just, I think just culturally it can be intimidating, you know, as someone who doesn't look like everyone else to enter the game, and it's changing. I think it's improving, but I think there's still a ways to go. What was your experience in youth hockey like? Did you experience any of those barriers yourself, and or was it relatively smooth in that regard?
Yeah, it was relatively smooth, I'd say. You know, as a kid, you know, you're just playing hockey, right? You're just out there with your buddies. You're just flying around the ice. You know, my dad was always the assistant coach in our team, so he always ran the defense. And so, you know, he was always just big feet, you know, around the rink. And I was just trying to have fun out there. But as you grow up, you kind of realize, you know, the significance of, you know, having a Black father be on the bench all the time, or, you know, being a mixed race and hearing kids of color or minority backgrounds tell their different stories of how they grew up and play hockey and maybe some of the names they've been called along the way. And so you just learn more and more about it. And then, like being a chance to play in different charity events. Like I played on the, all minority and Black background team in a tournament when I was at Northeastern. It was the Beantown Classic, but it was like the senior division. And so it's so cool. And and just to be around kids and just to hear their stories and some of the, you know, the barriers that they face. And you know, fortunately, I've never really faced any like outward backlash personally, but, you know, as a young kid, you're just playing hockey, and that's all that, you know, I want to be able to help with kids growing up these days is just go out there and have fun, you know, and don't worry about, you know, what you look like or what other people might not think you, and just, you know, have a more welcome environment, you know, for these kids to pursue their passion.
There was something I wanted to ask you about is that, you know, when we go out of our lane as sports writer and start discussing other topics, sometimes readers or people on social media will tell us stick to hockey, because as if we're only sports writers and that's our only dimension in life and there's nothing more to us. So it's obviously it's a bit upsetting, but I wonder if you get sometimes the same feedback as an athlete, because the Canadians and any sports team for that matter is in a position to be a vehicle for change. And athletes, you know, you have this platform where when you express yourself, you can try to be a vehicle for change. So do you sense that as a hockey player, as a role model, you have a responsibility to express yourself and try to be a vehicle for change? Or do you sense that sometimes players will say, well, I'm just an athlete, and can I just be an athlete and don't bother me with anything else?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I think it's honestly sometimes scary to really speak your mind about certain topics because of that backlash, because of what people might say, or, you know, like you said, stick to hockey. And I feel like there's this almost kind of fear in sports for some people to speak their mind because they don't want the negative feedback. It's like, and especially with social media these days, I feel like you're either on one side or you're on the other, you know?
And right.
Not everyone's going to ever agree with you. And so there's always going to be, you know, those people who send hate comments or whatnot. And so I feel like there's this almost fear of, you know, I'm going to stay in my lane. I'm just going to play hockey and do my job. But like you said, the being, you know, part of the Canadians organization and you guys being, you know, writers and having such audiences, like you have such a huge ability to make change and really make an impact on people and open people's eyes and really just tell your story. And I think that's what's so great about, you know, writing is you're telling a story, you know, and I think as an athlete, to be able to tell your story is really amazing. And the Canadians, I mean, have done a great job encouraging their players to speak about stuff, you know, giving them opportunities to do that. So I think it's super important. And I definitely feel like, at least personally, it's a responsibility.
Yeah,
that's a big change with the Canadians. You might not realize it because you just arrived, but you're actually arriving at a perfect time, because the Canadians historically actively discourage their players from speaking their mind or making any kind of waves whatsoever. And so that's definitely been a change. You arriving at this moment and some of your teammates as well, I think have been pretty open talking about things, and it's kind of a perfect storm, if you will. But you know, in my experience, and listen, like what you just said, like you're either on this side or the other in much of society right now. It's so polarized. My experience in hockey generally, I don't know if your experience has been the same, but it's a bit of the hockey world has a bit of a conservative bent, you know, more or less. It's so when you talk about taking advantage of this platform, and you have a room of 20, 23 guys, you guys have to be a team, and not everyone's going to see things the same. I mean, for example, the Canadians Pride Night this year, you know, you have one teammate who didn't want to participate, and that's fine. That's his right. But these are things that teams have to deal with. How do you feel taking advantage of that platform or utilizing that platform to its full potential to speak out on certain things, but still be within the team, having different viewpoints on the team? You know, how does that all play out? Is that stuff that you guys talk about? does it come up much? Do you, if you say something in the media and teammates can, like, do they come and talk to you about it? Like, how does that, I always feel like there's kind of an eggshells, walking on eggshells kind of thing aspect to that within the dressing room.
Yeah. That's honestly a great question because, you know, that's what's so great about sports, I think, is at the end of the day, you have a common goal, you know, and that's to win and do it at, you know, your best ability. And I think just over the years, you just learn to adapt to so many different personality types and so many different beliefs and so many different types of people that, you know, when you get to this level, like for the 99% of it, all, you know, the bad people are kind of weed out. It's funny, you know, along the levels that like you get higher and higher and all kind of the bad eggs, you know, are weed out along the way. So, I mean, from like a human standpoint, everyone in the room are great guys, you know, and yes, they're going to have different beliefs and, you know, that doesn't mean I'm not going to, you know, talk to someone if they don't believe the same thing. Like if they might have a different political view or might have a different, different standpoint on stuff. But as long as you're a good person, you know, and you're a good teammate, and at the end of the day, you're trying to help the Canadians win. That's all that really matters in the locker room. And you go home and you might talk about whatever when you're at home, but in the locker room, you know, everyone's super professional and great, and encouraging and good teammates. So, you know, when you're at the rink, that's all that really matters.
But does that have to be taken into account before you decide to take a stand on something, before you decide to kind of step out of your lane, like we were mentioning earlier, and not just be a hockey player and be a role model, but come out with some strong opinions? Do you have to keep that in mind at all? Or is that a time for you to express yourself and be an individual and not worry so much about that?
Yeah, I think it is a good time to be an individual and just be true to yourself, honestly. Just, and again, as long as you're a good teammate, like you're not going up there bashing your teammates or blaming anyone else, like, then I feel like everyone is really great about, you know, allowing you to be yourself. You know, like everyone has quirky personalities, different things. But like you said, speaking out in the media and about different events, I feel like that is kind of your time to show your individualism and how you think about stuff.
I know that we were not necessarily planning on talking about hockey, but I'm just curious, just listening to you, I've noticed this year how this group of Montreal Canadiens players were probably the most engaging and interesting and relatable that I've dealt with since I've started covering hockey. And it really struck me. I think that the younger generation has a lot to do with it, but they were a really friendly, good bunch of guys. And it hasn't always been this way. And I'm wondering, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Do good guys finish last in hockey? In a sense, like, if you have sincerely, genuinely good guys, does that translate on the ice, or on the ice, do you need to be pricks in order to win?
I think you kind of need to be pricks. I think it's, I do. And I don't think that, you know, being a good person off the ice doesn't mean you can't do that on the ice. Because, you know, I've known plenty of guys that, you know, are the nicest guys. And even me personally, like, if you can be a nice guy off the ice, but once you get on the ice, it's just like all friends, you know, game over. And you look across the sheet and there's your competition and it's to win, you know. And I think hockey's really funny that way because a lot of guys are so laid back. And you're like, oh, this guy's so relaxed. And then you go out there on the ice and you see him like lay someone out or fight. And you're like, is this dude the same person? You know, it's just so different. But yeah, you definitely need a little edge too, for sure. And I think a lot of guys in our locker room have a good, you know, mix of that. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think Arbor is the best a good example of that, because if you meet Arbor, there's no way you could imagine that he's as nasty a guy as he is on the ice, because he's just not off the ice. Yeah,
he's a little softy off the ice.
Yeah,
but on the ice, you don't want to meet him.
No, he's the definition of prick. I mean, it's
a few weeks ago, we asked our readers, we made a fan survey, a big poll, and we asked our readers what was the biggest detriment to the Canadians in attracting top players. And a lot of people replied that the overbearing media, the pressure, was really a huge factor. And I'd like to have your thoughts on how, what's been your experience of the dreaded Montreal market? You know, you coming from Boston, you know, arriving in Montreal, obviously it's mostly a French community, but I think that it's perfectly easy for someone who speaks English to live in English in Montreal. But what's been your experience of being in this city, in this environment, with also the constant media environment that you know, that might add to the pressure that you're feeling on a day-to-day basis? But how have you lived this season since you've arrived with the Canadiens from that standpoint?
For sure, yeah. It's funny that you put it like the dreaded Montreal pressure, but in my eyes, like, it's not dreaded at all. Like, I talk to you guys and yeah, like you guys might have some tough questions sometimes, but it's, you know, I think it's great. It's been great to build a relationship with you guys and the rest of the media members. And I feel like from like a fan standpoint and media standpoint, it means that you guys care, and that's great. And you guys want the Canadians to win. And like, we feel that same exact way. I don't really see it as pressure rather than like passion. And I think that's fantastic. And that's going to come, you know, with any professional sport, you know, the pressure to live up to the expectations and compete hard. But this year, I feel like might have been a little different just because, you know, the expectations weren't as high for the team and how many young guys we had. And I think moving forward, there might be more the feeling of like the urgency to win and moving forward as the team continues to grow and whatnot. But I thought it was fantastic. And you know, in college, like, you don't have that media, like, you're not chatting about the games or whatnot. But I really enjoy, you know, meeting people and getting to know people and their stories and you guys over the course of the year. And so, I mean, I had a super positive experience with it all. And I feel like maybe as an older guy, like, maybe as your situation starts to change, it might be a little different. Like, but that's just from my standpoint.
I guess it depends on your personality too. Some will realize that they're comfortable with that. Some others might not be so much. But I think of a guy like Brendan Gallagher, who's been dealing with that his whole career. For him, it's like, that's reality. But a guy who's been maybe bouncing around different teams throughout his career, he lands in Montreal, he might be taken aback and say, "What the hell is that?" You know.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And like I said, the passion in Montreal is just, I feel like it's just so different from, you know, majority of places. Like, there might be a few markets that have that same, you know, like, following. But I mean, nothing can beat Montreal, you know, and how great the fans are there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's great. And I think I'd much rather play in a place that the people care and really, you know, care about the team and follow the team and want to win and want to see great hockey, then, you know, not care at all.
Right.
I wanted to get back to just some of the stuff you said about making hockey more accessible. Have you given any thought to what can be done in that sense? Like, you know, I mean, reducing the cost of playing hockey is a great thing to say in theory. I think we would all love for hockey to be less expensive, to be more accessible to more people. But there are realities in terms of ice time. You know, the actual game at the elite level is getting more and more expensive. Like, the cost of, like, the price of you guys' is sticks are like, what are they? I mean, if you were actually paying for them, would they be like $300? And like, the skates are like a grand. It's like, it's only getting, while everyone wants to make it cheaper, it's only getting more and more expensive. Have you thought of ways to bridge that gap, to make it so that more kids can play this game?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you think about it, it's absolutely nuts. Like some of these guys that they go home to like the Toronto area, they're saying their ice time is like to rent a sheet of ice is like $400. Like guys are paying $50 per session to skate. And it's just, it's honestly absurd. I haven't put too much thought. Like I haven't sat down and really thought about like, okay, like what can we do? I think that's something we're going to look into in the next couple of years of maybe, you know, starting a foundation of some sort or starting, you know, community work that you can do every summer when you go back home and looking more into it. It's a great question, honestly, because it's like, where do you even start with it? I think
it just seems so daunting. Like it's so, like it's,
yeah,
the cost is so astronomical for players at the elite level. It seems like an impossible puzzle. And that's why, like, I don't, you know, I asked the question, but your answer is perfectly reasonable because there's no clear answer to it. And it just seems like you're at the bottom of this massive mountain and you got to take a step, but what's that first step, you know?
Yeah. And I even think like we didn't grow up a wealthy family by any means, but even just like the miles put in the car and the gas and just going to different tournaments, like, and you know, paying for hotel rooms, like, and now like when playing youth hockey, travel such an important aspect of it because you're playing at these venues where they bring all the talent to Chicago one weekend, then they bring all the talent to Toronto one weekend, and like even from a flexibility of your job standpoint, like my parents both work full time, they continue to work full time, and thank God they had a little flexibility with their work that they could maybe get out early. My dad could get out early to coach, you know, my mom could drive on the weekends and whatnot. And I still don't know how they did it, even with just two boys, like me and my brother. It's unbelievable how they did it. But it's such a commitment to really dive into hockey and give your kids the full resources to be good at it. And you know, I'm extremely grateful for what my parents did, but just from a money and time standpoint, it's really, you know, astronomical and different than picking up a basketball and going down the street and shooting at the hoop. Like it's just not the same.
It's funny because about maybe 15 years ago, there was still that stereotype of the hockey player was usually a guy from Western Canada that had grown up on the farm, you know, seeing his parents work all day long, you know, from sunrise to sunset and dusk till dawn. And, you know, and it had developed his work ethic from his parents and all that and brought that to his hockey career. And there's been a shift. And now with the price of, you know, of playing hockey as a kid and then attending those academies in the summer or summer AAA hockey or things like that and all those tournaments that ask you so much money, I wonder if over time the wealth has changed the DNA of what is a hockey player, because the typical origin of the hockey player seems to have shifted. Mm. I don't know if basically a hockey player remains exactly the same as it was before, or basically the mindset has changed because for the most part, the money that has helped propel this young player and made him into an NHL player, it's a different reality than what it was before.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, look at how the game of hockey has changed. Like you said, like back in the day, there's probably more of those hard-nosed players with, you know, just a strong work ethic. Like you see the pictures of like even Brind'Amour, these guys, like, the huge arms, like it's insane. It looks like he's been working on a farm for 20 years. Like how these guys even skate around? It looks like they're about to pop. And then you look at a hockey player today, and some of these like smaller stature guys, and you know, and you're like, really, this guy's an NHL hockey player and get on the ice and they're flying around, you know, like quick mitts and I totally agree. It's the money and the investment in the kids and the skill work. And you know, now it's like you're not doing it right if you don't have your skills coach, if you don't have your skating coach, if you don't have your video coach, and it just continues to grow. And that's why I feel like you see the skill level and the talent get so high, and the depth of the league just continuing to grow, but there's less of those hard-nosed players who maybe don't have the skill because you just can't keep up unless you're doing that extra work.
Yeah.
Which is another one of those barriers, ultimately. Like, I mean, exactly. if you can't afford the skills coaches and the skating coaches in the summertime, you're going to fall behind. Yeah.
You're falling way behind. Right. But that's a good thing about social media, honestly, is because, like, I never had, you know, really those extra coaches, but I was able to look up, like, drills online. Like, right. Sticking in the basement. Like, I still just do extra work by myself, like, on my rollerblades, mm-hmm. that I'll just see drills online. And I'll look up, or, you know, it's easy enough to set up, like, the net in your backyard. And, like, we fashioned a makeshift, like, netting, and we made, like, a little area behind the net. So if pucks hit off the crossbar, they weren't, you know, breaking through our windows at home. So I feel like if you really have the drive, you can make it work. But the barriers just continue to grow.
Don't want to keep you much longer, but you mentioned earlier kind of in passing that maybe in the next couple of years, you might start a foundation. Like, have you set any goals in terms of what you want to do away from the ice, philanthropy, some of the humanitarian stuff? Are there certain areas that you want to address in your career, not imminently, but before you're done playing?
Yeah, of course. I wouldn't really say that there are, like, set goals right now. I think I'd love to tackle, you know, more of the accessibility of hockey, like we talked about. I think that's a great topic, especially for, you know, people of color or minority backgrounds. I think that'd be really great to jump into. So I have to go back up to Montreal to get cleared to skate, because mm-hmm. I'm still doing rehab right now. But me and my girlfriend are going to go up and talk to Ryan from the foundation. Really just sit down with them and be like, okay, what's important to us, and what, you know, would we love to work on, like, this upcoming year? So that would be great to kind of brainstorm and have a more of a set framework, you know, coming to the year of what we want to do off the ice, because it is super important to me and super important to her as well. And so that'll kind of paint a clear picture. But those are the basic overall goals.
By foundation, you mean the Canadian Children's Foundation, I guess?
No, he just works, like, in overall planning, like, with the Habs Foundation.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you look forward to in the summertime? You know, obviously you do your training, getting ready for the next season, but when mm-hmm. when summer comes, are there activities or things to do, things to see, places to go that you look forward when summer arrives, and this summer especially?
Honestly, the warm weather. That's what I look forward to most. Just the sun, like, being out here chatting with you guys, that's, you know, the best. Just come outside and hang out. And, you know, it is being nice back home, and that's one thing I really look forward to, is just being with, like, my family and friends. Like, I have my buddies that I grew up with from the age of 5 and 6 and 7. Like, and we still have a group that hangs out with each other, and so it's just really nice to catch up. And I think that's what's great about, you know, good friendships, is you could catch up a year later and not miss a beat. And I feel like that's really, really cool, and I love that aspect. And but honestly, I train, like, I'm still doing rehab now, like I said, but I use the summer to, like, really work on stuff and try to grow your game. So I end up skating a lot over summer, so a lot of time's taken up with that. But mostly the family and friends, and just having time at night, you know, just to hang out and catch up. And I feel like that's what I look forward to most.
I would suppose that if your best friends are guys that you've known, let's say, in your teens, and you're an athlete, there chances are that your best friends might end up being athletes too. But if you had them, such as you, for a long, long time, it might be, you know, kids that grew up to become, you know, people going in all sorts of different walks of life. So if that's the case with you, what does it bring you in terms of fulfillment to be surrounded by guys that will talk about other stuff than hockey, and, you know, just bring variety into your life too? How refreshing is that when you're in touch with these people?
Oh, it's the best. It's the absolute best. Because, like, these guys are your buddies because they're your buddies. They're not your buddies because you play for the Canadians. Like,
right.
It's just great because at the end of the day, I'm Jordan, you know, and I've just been lucky enough to be given an opportunity to pursue my dream, you know, and live it out to this level. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm just me, and these guys have been my friends for 15 years. And that's great. Just to be able to sit down and they could care less that I play hockey, you know, and it's great. And they follow along and it's fantastic. And, you know, we'll talk during the year and shoot texts back and forth. But just sit down and fully, you know, be yourself and not even and think about hockey for a few hours. Like, it's really refreshing.
Well, off of that, we're going to end it with one hockey question and where you're at. I think you, you know, you took strides this year as a player. What did you, you know, what have you learned about what kind of NHL player you can be? And based on the information gathered this season, how do you set expectations for next season for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I mean, now you know what the season really looks like and what's expected of you as a, you know, an NHL player. And just to think about like how much I learned over the course of the year, just how the game's played, you know, how our team wants to play, just little things, you know, from Marty and Robes and from watching all the clips over the course of the year. And I think that it's great to have that foundation and really, you know what to expect coming into year two, for sure. And there's lots of stuff I want to work on, and, you know, I won't get into everything, but, you know, I'll continue to watch the clips from this past year and look at little details and be like, okay, this is what I can add. Like, and you see all the talent around the league and you can pick up so much from, you know, all the great defensemen, even now, like watching playoffs. But, again, that's what's great about the technology is you can log into, you know, Instat and watch clips of anyone in the league. And that's so great. So I just, you know, I think the main point is, yes, you know, there's a lot that I've learned, but there's also so much room for growth. Like, that's the really big thing that I came away with is I want to, you know, be a really good player in this league and be a great player in this league. And I think that takes a little time, but, you know, it's definitely possible. And I think that, you know, just continuing to put your head down and do all the right things. And I think, you know, over the course of the years, if you do the right things, you learn that it really does pay off in the end. And so just continuing to do that, honestly. And like I said, look at the film and really, you know, try to get better.
Is there someone in particular who orientates you or gears you towards certain clips more than others?
Like a certain player that I like to watch?
Well, not only that, or on your own game, say, you know, as to the aspects that you want to work on. Is it more Adam Nicklaus to say, hey, Jordan, you should check this out? Or is it you mentioned Stéphane Robida earlier, or mm-hmm. or is it something that you do entirely on your own initiative?
I think it's all three. Honestly, I think like me and Roby will watch a lot of clips during the season of just me. But then like we'll do group sessions sometimes. We'll pull up clips from other teams. And like even now, we've been doing some clips with Adam Nicklaus. Like once a week, he'll pull up some clips from playoffs, point out different things about what the defense are doing. Good things, bad things. And then myself, you know, I'll watch clips of myself. I'll pull up different players that I like. I've been doing that for probably since like early college. And I found it helped so much. Cause like it's sometimes tough to watch yourself. because you're like, oh, why did I do that? You know, and you're like, you get so frustrated. You're like, I really made that play. But then sometimes you're like, oh, I played better than I thought I did. Yeah. And I really feel like hockey's such an emotional sport that you can get so wrapped up in the emotion, you know, the frustration, the happiness, the anger, the competitiveness. But then when you watch it on tape, it's, you know, it's black and white. It's like, this is what happened. Mm-hmm. And it really takes the emotion out of it. And it's nice to, you know, watch it down the road and really look, like look at it from a non-emotional point of view.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. Well, that's great, Jordan. Thank you so much. We're going to let you enjoy that beautiful weather. It's beautiful. It's great that you mentioned the weather as being your highlight of the summer, because the sun kept popping out from behind your head. It just looks very gorgeous over there. So thanks so much for the time. Hope you finish up rehab really well. And we'll see you. We'll see you in the fall.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Man, Jordan is the best. It is such an engaging person, so kind, and he's a good reflection of that new wave of players. He's so much fun to deal with, and when he talks, you can hear the smile on his face. You don't have to see it; you can just hear the smile on his face, and that's exactly who Jordan Harris is.
Yes, and you know, as I mentioned that. During the interview, you know, like a lot of the most interesting things that Jordan says, or a lot of the most interesting conversations that we have with him come when the quote unquote interview is over and you're just talking, you know? And so that's, I think you guys got a little bit of a taste of that. Really interesting to hear him towards the end say that he plans on meeting with a representative of the Canadian Children's Foundation when he's next in Montreal to kind of map out how he can have more of an impact in the community. And, you know, the Clancy Award, I mean, just his eagerness to help whenever the Canadian Children's Foundation or anything going on around some of the thematic nights, you know, he's so, it's really genuine. And I think it's made clear now, it's just genuine enthusiasm on his part to take part. It's not a burden. It's not like they're taking away from his free time. You know, I think sometimes the Canadian Children's Foundation feels like they're imposing on players. They're worried to ask for too much of a player's time because they work so hard and their free time is precious and they don't want them to feel obligated to do it. It's kind of a tricky dance that they have to play considering that the Canadians are their employers. They're not technically mandated or they don't have to help, but that's something that and with Jordan, I don't feel like the foundation should ever feel that way. You have a very enthusiastic participant on your hands there.
Yeah, but my feeling is that if there's extracurricular stuff that the Canadians will ask their players, they won't mind doing stuff for the foundation as much as they would mind trying to guess the price of paper towels for the Jumbotron, you know.
Yeah, so. I think they do a lot of that stuff on their media day, so it just gets spread out over the course of the year. But yes, I agree, especially considering how some of the players performed on that in-arena promo. For people who don't attend Montreal Canadiens games that often, every game they have a thing that's sponsored by a local grocery chain, or actually a big grocery chain, where they have to guess the price of products, kind of like they did on The Price is Right, you know, and so that's what Marc-Antoine is referring to. But yeah.
Right. And sometimes it just highlights how disconnected these people are from the real people who do their groceries themselves.
Yes. You know, guessing $10 for a 4-pack of paper towels, you know, kind of thing like that. Anyhow. But I think you could see obviously throughout that conversation how grounded Jordan Harris actually is when he was talking about the price of ice time in Toronto. You know, it's really just a real sincere desire to make a difference. And I think his answer was honest in the sense that he hasn't given it much thought and he can't find what is the solution to accessibility in hockey. But the fact that he wants to find one is very encouraging. We need more players who want to find solutions to this and to make the game more accessible and to widen the pool of players that are available for NHL teams to draft from various areas various populations, marginalized populations, players, kids that can't necessarily afford to play at a high level, but if they have a talent, if there are mechanisms in place to make sure that that talent makes it to the end, that would only help grow. That would only help the game. It would help the industry. It would help the business of it. Any way you want to look at hockey, this would help. And so it's nice to see that there's a young player entering the league who wants to tackle that.
So I hope that you enjoy this episode, this interview. We'll slowly start to ramp things up again with the combine that's only a couple of weeks away. So obviously all the top prospects for the upcoming draft will be in Buffalo. We are not
all
top
of them
prospects,
except for one.
But yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Certain Matvei Meshkov is not going to be there. I'd be curious to see if the other Russian players will also not
be
attend.
There. Yes.
Yeah. So Arpin and I are not top prospects, but we are going to be at the combine nonetheless. So there might be an episode there. So stay tuned. Obviously, our next episode would be in French, but pay attention. We'll just drop one episode here and there. And I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Jordan Harris. And until our next episode, we'll enjoy the playoffs, enjoy hoping the weather, and we'll talk to you soon.